and welcome to the Offside Rule. It's me, Kate Borsay, and alongside me, a hatter and a gunner. First up, it's Faye Carruthers. Logical, Luton-loving, learned Faye Carruthers. Welcome back.
Love the alliteration. Thank you very much.
And returning to the Offside Rule from, well, I think the last time we had you on the show, Sarah Shepherd, was April 2016.
Oh my God.
Yes. Since then, you've been at The Times and The Coach's Voice, and now you're at The Athletic as staff editor. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
And how are you enjoying The Athletic? Because, of course, it's a brand new enterprise.
It is.
It's shaking up football journalism. Not everyone's a fan because you're being a bit disruptive, but...
Nobody likes change.
Nobody likes change, but there are some very good pieces on there, and I've subscribed and I've been reading away and enjoying it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been very exciting. So we launched in August, so it's been over a month already. And like you said, we've got some excellent pieces on there, some of the best writers in the business. I won't name because I'll obviously there's like 40 of them, so
yes.
I can't.
Lots of them that you'll probably miss,
I'll miss out.
Yes.
And upset.
Yeah, they're very, you know, easily upset. They're all very sensitive. And that's a joke. So yeah, it's been great. And the best part of it is that it's my job to read all their stuff, which I would have done anyway. And now I get to do it and get paid for it.
So is that where it's different? So your job is to basically check everything that comes in. Not everything, but a certain proportion of the stuff that comes in as editor. Well, not as editor, but one of the editors.
Thankfully,
I've just promoted Sarah Shepherd, everyone.
Yeah, sorry, Alex, you're fired. So it's our job to not only to do that, but also liaise with them on the kind of piece that they're going to write. You know, when they need to, you know, everyone needs to talk to somebody about their ideas. You know, it's very hard to think up lots of different ideas on your own. So it's we're there for the writers to bounce ideas off.
I did have a bit of a pop at you for kind of a lack of female writers, and I know that that's something that you're addressing. So can you set my mind at ease as someone who champions female writers? And on the Offside Rule podcast, we try and encourage and promote and help out in a professional way as many female writers as we can. Are you taking steps to bring along this because it's a real flourishing area, but it's hard to sometimes give women the confidence and the route into sports journalism?
Yeah, the desire is definitely there to increase it. In terms of female writers, we've got a young female writer called Nancy Frostick who covers Sheffield Wednesday for
us. Who has worked for the Offside Rule, by the way, guys.
Excellent. And is doing an excellent job. And also Amy Lawrence, who everybody knows, who's covering Arsenal for us. So yes, the desire is there. Obviously, as we know, the pool is much smaller, so it's harder to find the right person. But I definitely know from being in the office that the desire is there to find more.
Fabulous. Well, I wish you all the best and will, of course, be watching closely. And I'll be taking you to task again, Sarah. But I'm only joking. Best of luck with that endeavour. And I'm sure, you know, we'll be having many more Athletic voices on. Already Kieran Tavam, who's your women's football journalist, has been on our WSL show. More on that a little bit later on. Faye, what have you been up to? How the devil are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Been playing lots of netball. I'm kind of walking around a little. Like I'm being a bit rude to people at the moment and giving them the middle finger. I've got that classic netball injury when you go to catch the ball and you catch it with your finger. So it's beautifully swollen and looks really rude. But yeah, I did get player of the match in the match I played.
Faye.
That, so it's fine. And do you know what? I know this is going to sound so sad. Like I don't blow my own trumpet like this very often, but I have not won player of the match for about 3 years. And I've got a really good team. So that's probably part of the reason why I'm the weakest link. But I literally skipped around the netball court. How's that?
What was the magic ingredient to your player? Because, you know, perhaps footballers are tuning into this. I know a lot of sports people do. What is the secret ingredient to getting player of the match? Was there anything particular about this week, Faye?
Endeavour.
Okay. It wasn't like a bag of Monster Munch before you went on or anything.
No, definitely not. I mean, maybe they felt sorry for me because of the finger, quite possibly. But no, I don't know what it was. I think it kind of goes in like a weird rotation of if the weakest player on the team looks like they've put in as much effort as the good players on the team who just, you know,
Faye,
do it easily.
I'm just going to stop you there. Don't be so modest. Take it. I hope you got a good prize.
Do you know what? I'm dining out on this for the next 3 years.
Well, I've been up to my heady mix of politics and football this week, you'll be pleased to know. I've been hanging out at Westminster with lots of other people who think that they're very important, but they're not. And I was a bit disturbed to see, again, yet again, football being used in analogies by senior politicians and important people in government, because it's a cheap shot. We all know that Michael Gove supports football. We know he's a football supporter. We know he likes his football. Does he need to bring it up every so often? No. This is his latest. "I think it's only fair to say," says Michael Gove, "that Boris is the Pep Guardiola of British politics. God. He's a born winner." What? Can we just point out right now that Manchester City won 8-0 last weekend? Johnson's lost 6 votes in a row. I don't think there are any own goals in that game, were they? Unlike Michael Gove. So be quiet, please. Do not mess football around by dragging it into politics. It makes my blood boil.
So they do it just to, like, as if they're the men of the people.
Well, they think it's exactly
just, oh, and it's so cringe.
And it doesn't even work because their analogies and their references, as we've just pointed out, aren't quite right. Anyway, a reminder that we're now on Jack Radio Friday nights from 7. Jack's available online and now on digital radio, and you can follow us outside of listening time at Offside Rule Pod on both Insta and Twitter. Coming up on the show, we're getting the old stars out to don their boots again for England, and we're talking rivalries as Southampton and Portsmouth faced off for the first time since 2012, but some claiming it's not a real rivalry. What? We'll explain more in just a mo. But first, glory, glory, Man United. Glory, glory, Man United. Glory, glory, Man United. As the Reds go marching, oh, oh, oh. Perhaps the most inappropriate song that we could have used. Maybe not if you're a Manchester City fan or a Liverpool fan. Well, not quite, basically. After the third round of the Carabao Cup, it took a penalty shootout for United to squeak past League One's Rochdale. Other giant killings, and it's been a spectacular week in this competition, hasn't it? Other giant killings, Colchester, the lowest ranked team, beating Spurs on pens, as did the other League Two outfit, Crawley, against Championship strugglers Stoke. Oxford demolished West Ham 4-0. Absolute shocker there for the Hammers. And in the alliterative fixtures, Burton beat Bournemouth, Sunderland shocked Sheffield United. Thank God I got all that out in one go. Faye and Sarah, your reaction to some of the big shocks this week in the Carabao Cup. Faye.
It's made it very interesting, especially when you've then got, you know, some big Premier League hitters facing each other off in the next round as well. It might mean that we get I am using inverted commas here, I know that's sad, minnows, because everybody loves to support an underdog, particularly in the League Cup, I would say. I'm just bearing in mind I'm sat next to the wonderful Sarah Shepherd, who is an Arsenal fan. I'm just going to remind her about 1988. Luton Town 3, Arsenal 2.
Too young,
Faye.
Too young, I don't know.
Well, I was also quite young myself. However, I do still remember. But yeah, you know, it's good.
What happened to Luton this time round?
Oh, we just aren't discussing that. You were talking about the shocks, so it's fine. Let's just skip over. But yeah, I think what's mostly exciting about this is that, you know, we could potentially have one of the lower league clubs go a significant distance in that competition. And I love that.
Mm. Sarah, which one for you was the worst of the worst?
Well, given my allegiances, I would say probably the worst, but also the best, was the Spurs defeat. which really surprised me, because as much as Spurs fans seem to be down on their side and down on their manager at the moment, I still think he's a brilliant manager.
You got a really interesting tweet about this, didn't you? I'll say interesting. I'm going to say stupid.
Yeah, it wasn't directed at me personally.
Okay.
I just saw that Poch out was trending and did a little look to see what was behind it, and found a tweet from a certain person saying, "It's time for you guys to admit Poch is beyond overrated. Tottenham's results the last 10 months would get any other manager sacked," which I just found bizarre considering.
I mean, Champions League finals, you're definitely sackable,
yeah,
right? Because if you lose a Champions
nowadays,
League final,
I suppose so.
So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But obviously, I was really pleased for Colchester, given, you know, they've been through a lot over the last decade or so. So, yeah, to see them do that and get into the next round where they've got, obviously, Crawley, so...
Do you know what? And that's the kind of thing that I sit there, great, one of them will go through, but at the same time, you kind of, you know, a lot of the time, these clubs want some money, It's a shame they've not got a big draw.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to United and the overarching question. How do you solve a problem like United? Because it's not just, of course, the fact that they had to go to pens to get their result against Rochdale. It's the fact that it's been a slow downhill slide, really, since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took charge. Under Sir Alex Ferguson, they won 38 trophies, including 13 Premier League titles. Since then, it's been one FA Cup, one EFL Cup, one Europa League. And it's also been David Moyes and Ryan Giggs and Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho and currently Ole. Not a great start to the season. They've won two, drawn two and lost two in the league. The performance against West Ham at the weekend was woeful. I mean, it was awful. And on Wednesday night, of course, we've talked about their League Cup endeavours. So how do you start to try and fix the problem? And by the way, feel free to be outrageous. We're not talking about, well, we can, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the other solutions that people are saying. I like to think on this podcast we offer something a little bit dynamic. Faye, let's go to you first.
Well, talking about dynamism, and this is what everybody else has been talking about, I'm going to talk about the youth. The only difference this time with United, because, you know, promoting from within has been a successful model for them in the past, and it does take time. But, for example, the difference when Fergie blooded in youngsters, it was into a title-winning side, as opposed to now.
Yes.
That, you know, that they're struggling and they've been struggling. It's a fractured side, I think, is probably the best word I could potentially use for it. But if you're looking at positives, I'm a positive person. So you know, I'm not going to hammer United at all. I'm going to sit there and go, look at the youngsters coming through. So Axel Tuanzebe was captaining the side against Rochdale on Wednesday night, which can only be, there's positives and negatives to take from
there
that.
There were a lot of questions over that, weren't there?
He's 21 years old, he's from Rochdale, so it's a nice gesture from Ollie in the first place. However, it questions the other leaders in the group, because they had Jesse Lingard on the pitch, Paul Pogba on the pitch, Phil Jones on the pitch, and you've got a 21-year-old. I mean, that to me sparks huge questions. But is Ollie just sitting there and saying, okay, well, look, we've spent all this money on all these players who just aren't doing it at the moment? I mean, Fred and Pogba in midfield on Wednesday night weren't exactly, barely did anything. I think Pogba had one decent chance and didn't score it. And so I'm, you know, you have to sit there and think, well, he must just be turning to youth and turning his back on the older, more experienced players. And
they had lots of chances, didn't they, United, I think, in that game. And it was like, well, why is no one putting these away? What is it about that team? And I completely agree with you in that they had a hardcore backbone of experience and then the kids were added on top. And that's what United don't have at the moment.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Rashford looks a little bit low on confidence and that's a worry, but he is one of the more experienced younger players, having already, you know, been in the Premier League for a fair while. But 17-year-old Mason Greenwood coming through the ranks is a massive positive. Then, of course, you've got Daniel James. He's still only 21, first year in the Premier League. So there are positives to take from it, I would say. So if you're talking about how to solve a problem like United's, squad depth is a big problem, but they are starting to bring up some of the youngsters.
Are.
And as long as they stick with Ollie, and perhaps it's just going to take another transfer window. And, well, even again over the summer, if he's given that amount of time, for him to actually get rid of some of these players that are being paid vast amounts of money and not doing the business.
Well, Ed Woodward insists that he is sticking with Solskjaer. Sarah, give me your solution.
Well, I kind of think the problems are bigger, and that bigger than just getting in more players, better players. I don't think the problem is the manager. I think it's bigger than the manager. It basically goes, way above the manager to Mr. Woodward. You know, when we saw with the end of the Wenger legacy at Arsenal that they've used that opportunity to put in place a new structure in the club. Manchester United just haven't done that. So they're still kind of continuing with this cult of the manager, giving the manager all the responsibility. And we've seen that that just doesn't work, because every time you lose a manager, which they've done multiple times since Ferguson left, you're changing everything. So now there's just this void, you know, there's this lack of a vision, of a real sense of what Manchester United are and what they're trying to do. And I think putting young players into that situation is really a big ask for them to kind of suddenly turn things around using young players when there isn't an overarching idea.
I would say that the biggest thing working in the Glazers and Ed Woodward's favour there is that the results on the pitch are not affecting the brand. And until it starts to damage them in the pocket commercially and affect their global brand, it doesn't matter to them.
It won't right now, but of course, without Champions League, it is going to start to affect them financially. It's worth pointing out that what, 900 odd million pounds has been spent at that club over the last 7 or 8 years. And arguably, if you look at the spine of that side, I can't really see much of it. If you're talking about the absolute definite starters, the players who will lead on the pitch, who will make a change for him, and I'd hope that that would have been someone like Paul Pogba. Mm. He could have influenced, he could have led from the front in a way that would attract young players at the club to want to rise to his level. And he doesn't do that.
And how bizarre was it, by the way, that as United's penalty taker, he did not take a penalty in the shootout when he was still on the pitch?
Yeah, it's just that, I mean, that there have always been question marks over Paul Pogba at United, and I don't think that they're going to stop for now. I've got a couple of radical solutions, and do feel free to chip in with these ones. How about bringing back Zlatan? I mean, it isn't... Would it be the most outrageous thing in the world? He's at LA Galaxy. Even if he doesn't play that much, I just think you need some inspiration there. And you can say whatever you like about Zlatan, but I actually think he is good with younger players.
He would be a motivating factor.
A motivating factor. And look, United let him go to LA Galaxy on a free. Surely the favour needs to be returned. That's one out there solution. The other one out there for me, unless you two want to chip in with anything else, is just simply beards. So check this, okay? This is from Albinio on Twitter, who works for Opta. Premier League managers with beards have a 42% win rate so far this season. Those without beards have won 33%.
How could he be called the baby-faced assassin, though, with a beard? But I mean, it's kind of not against his... It's not with his brand, is it?
I don't think he's capable.
No,
I've not seen a hint of facial hair on
he could be the beardy-faced assassin. That's what producer Rab has just suggested. In head-to-heads, managers with beards have won 44%, while managers without facial hair have won 28%. So I'm just saying, it could be the way to turn around United's fortunes.
They need to check, though, whether, because Poch tends to shave it off and then grow it again and then shave it off. You know, what's his win rate clean shaven versus, you know, a little bit scruffier?
I was going to mention on Poch, actually, one of the Spurs fans in our office has got a thing about the difference between when he wears a tracksuit and when he wears a suit.
I love stuff like this.
Yeah, apparently it's much better when he wears a suit, and he's definitely been wearing a tracksuit a lot lately.
Mm.
Patrice Evra's tweeted, by the way, after the result on Wednesday night. People are laughing at us, he says, because we hurt them so much in the past. If you don't support us when we struggle, you can't support us when we win. We need positive energy from all United fans. I know we all need to work together, no matter which role you have for this club. For Evra Red. He signs off with that one. Thanks very much, Patrice, for your words of wisdom.
Evra for manager. There you go. Fixed the lot.
Well, there you go. We've put our suggestions into the ring. Who knows? Maybe the next time you see Ole, he'll have a full face of hair. Thanks very much for listening, Ole. Anyway, up next, get the fisticuffs up. We're talking rivalries. Hey, listeners, lend me your ears. Let me tell you about our WSL show. It's our dedicated podcast to all things women's football, and you can listen to it right now. Well, ideally after you finish this episode, but, you know, go for it if you want to. This week, we talk to West Ham captain Gilly Flaherty, and we round up everything that's happening across the continent in France, Spain, Italy and Germany. As you know, it's already out, so just have a search on your podcasting app now for the Offside Rule WSL edition and hit subscribe. It's got its own feed, don't forget. At the Offside Rule WSL edition, because women's football is for life, not for every few years. You're listening to the Offside Rule with myself, Kate Borsay, Faye Carruthers and Sarah Shepherd. Let's talk rivalries. When is a rivalry not a rivalry? When is it a derby, but not necessarily a rivalry? This is after Danny Mills, who earlier this week sparked fury after suggesting that Portsmouth versus Southampton was not a rivalry. So when is a rivalry not a rivalry? What are your favourite rivalries? Can I say it anymore? What are some rivalries that the media ham up that actually aren't a rivalry? And what's your favourite name of a rivalry? Is everyone still with me? Just about. Okay. Sarah Shepherd.
Yes, in light of having Portsmouth-Southampton this week, I want to talk about Bournemouth-Southampton, which happened just last Friday. And Bournemouth won it for the first time in quite a long time, I think. And for Bournemouth, that was a massive, massive result, because they see that Bournemouth-Southampton game as a real rivalry. You know, they kind of look to their South Coast neighbours as being, you know, a team they want to overcome. And Southampton basically don't give a monkeys. Or that's what they like to portray anyway, because they're too big and too successful, and Bournemouth just aren't anything to them. It's a bit of a sibling thing going on, where by Southampton are the big brother, big sister, and Bournemouth are the younger sibling going, yeah, you know, just trying to catch up, just want to be a bit like you, and Southampton are up there going, oh, you know, you're nothing to me. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
And they've also got quite nice fans though as well, haven't they, both sides? So you kind of don't really see that intense hatred that you see elsewhere.
Between them both. Mm. Yeah, yeah, it's true. Everyone's up for a jolly good jape, aren't they? Interesting combo though, the fact that one cares and one doesn't. Faye, what have you got for us?
So any motorway derby is a ridiculous name for a derby. So the one that always gets mentioned and nobody really understands why it's a rivalry, of course, is the M23 derby. Brighton against Crystal Palace, 40 miles or so between the two of them, doesn't really make any sense geographically. Every single time this comes up in the Premier League, I have to kind of remind myself as to why it is a rivalry. And it stems back from the late 1970s. And there was a bit of beef between Alan Mullery, who was manager of Brighton at the time, and Terry Venables, who was in charge of Palace. Now, I've heard different things because I looked up something this morning, actually, which I was like, oh, I hadn't seen that one before. Apparently, Brighton used to be known as the Dolphins.
Really?
Yes, I know. So, listen, Brighton and Crystal Palace fans, please, you know, tweet in and let us know if I'm wrong. She mutes her tweets. but please do, because I might be completely wrong. I just saw this in one piece and I thought, oh, that's really strange. And I couldn't find it anywhere else. So I might be completely wrong. But Crystal Palace used to be called the Glazers, apparently. And they then changed to the Eagles.
Yeah.
And so Brighton then changed to the Seagulls, almost to like kind of go...
Goad them a bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, apparently so. Also, Alan Mullery apparently lobbed a handful of coins at Palace fans once, and he had a cup of coffee poured over him by a Palace supporter, and they've just hated each other ever since.
Do you know where that, of course, the rivalry between Alan Mullery and Terry Venables stems from their time at Spurs? I think Venables moved to Spurs on the understanding that he might get the captaincy, and instead it was given to Alan Mullery instead, and Terry Venables had to take the vice captain. So it goes back a step, because then, of course, they then, I think it was their first managerial jobs, wasn't it, taking over Brighton for Mullery and Palace for Venables. So there's a great amount of folklore there, yeah. I guess, wrapped up in that.
Love it. But that's not the only motorway derby, of course, because it would be very remiss of me if I did not mention Luton against Watford. And again, a lot of people nowadays, because obviously what happened to Luton, not that I want to dwell on it in the slightest, but our kind of semi-fall from grace. We actually haven't played Watford for ages because our fortunes have been significantly different, unfortunately, but particularly in the 80s, it was an absolutely massive rivalry. I've been to one of these games, and it was back in 2002, the League Cup, when it was called the Worthington Cup.
Oh,
remember
my goodness,
that?
Yes, good old days.
Yes, and I mean, it was disgraceful. I don't want to dwell on it too much because, you know, what the Luton fans, a number of them were charged over it. What the Luton fans did that day was not great. There were Watford fans who were also charged as well. But there was fighting in pubs beforehand. There was Luton fans coming on the pitch. I got knocked over by riot police as I walked into Vicarage Road because they'd all been outside dealing with the trouble outside and then had to come inside to deal with all the pitch stuff. The most hilarious thing, though, is that my best friend, who had decided that this was the match he was going to bring his new girlfriend to for the first time. I remember saying to him, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. They're now married, by the way, with two children.
There you
but,
go.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, that was, I felt really sorry for her. She was like, it was her first football game. Not
oh
just
my
first
God.
Luton game, first football game. But we did win it, so it's all fine.
Blimmin' heck. Well, it's interesting, isn't it, how, for example, as a Liverpool fan, the Merseyside derby is a big one, but it's, of course, not as big as Manchester United versus Liverpool. So some local rivalries have been overtaken by club rivalries for one reason or another. Another example, Sarah, you mentioned one earlier of one team hating the other just a little bit more, the South Wales derby, Cardiff, Swansea. When they met in the Premier League, they weren't hugely controversial, but it seems that Swans fans dislike Cardiff fans a little bit more than the other way around. Apparently, Swansea fans sing Swim Away in reference to a famous event in the late 80s. I had to research this to find out what on earth happened. Apparently, in 88, Swansea fans chased Cardiff fans into the sea after a game. There's a bit here from the South Wales Evening Post that reports 50 Swansea fans chased 30 Cardiff supporters onto the beach near County Hall and into the sea. So now whenever the two sides meet, Swim Away is uttered by the Swansea fans. Any more to throw at me, ladies?
Well, in terms of names of derbies, if that's all right to go on to that, my favourite one is probably El Trafico, which refers to the Los Angeles LA Galaxy versus Los Angeles FC derby in MLS.
Brilliant.
Because LA is obviously gridlocked 24/7.
I've never heard that. That's excellent.
Menica scores! A goal for Menica.
What a scramble. Pesky Solido, and it was somehow kept out by Seaman.
And Sally crosses right! He pulled away at the back post, and he made what was by no means an easy header.
Absolutely fantastic goal from Joe Cole, and England are off and running.
Well, enough of fisticuffs and opposition and falling out with each other. The England Old Stars are going to be reunited. The FA's received an invite to set up an official Veterans England side to compete with nations across Europe. So who do we want to see in this side? And we can choose fantasy picks, so it can be players who are dead. So we kind of want an all-time England 11, I suppose. Sarah Shepherd, who do you want to throw in? I should be writing this down, really, but I'll try and type as we talk.
And I just ask, first of all, did the FA get this idea from that Harry's Heroes programme? where we're all put on, like, diets and lost a shed load of weight? Because if they did, well, I mean, you know, it's quite a good idea. But also, I'd go with Letizia as one of them, because in that programme, he did amazingly well. He lost about, I don't know, over a stone, I think. He was really, really, you know, stuck to his diet, trained hard.
Took it incredibly seriously.
Very seriously. So he's obviously still got a bit of that, you know, about him mentally. And also, I don't think he really played enough for England, given, you know, the brilliant player that he was. So he'd probably be my first pick.
Who else have you got for us?
You'll probably be unsurprised to hear the name of Ian Wright, who was my childhood hero and also did not get anywhere near enough England caps. And I know it upsets him greatly.
So this is almost like a retribution 11 for you, isn't it? It's almost like we're going to make up for lost time 11.
Yeah. So there's another one that I've got, Joe Cole, who did play, but not probably never played in his best position for England.
I'm just going to pull a face. I'm pulling a face.
So
listeners.
Talented, such a brilliant creative player, and I don't think he ever really got to show it. Like, stick him in the number 10 role, give him free reign.
Okay, I've written that in, Faye.
So I've gone a bit 90s with mine because of, you know, we're all of the same kind of era, aren't we? And, you know, 1990 was the World Cup that certainly got me excited and into football. And I remember standing at one of the roundabouts in Luton when the 1990 World Cup semi-finalists came home on an open-top bus.
Really?
And I have a fabulous photograph of Gazza at the front with his tongue sticking out and my mum's hand in my photograph waving. obviously, I'm sure we'd all love to see.
We'd all love Gazza.
We have got Gazza written down as well, Faye. So.
But excellent. great minds. But I'm going Chris Waddle for the mullet and a little bit of redemption for him as well, because I know he skied that penalty. So potentially, you know, gives him a chance. And also now he's a pundit. You know, there's always this thing. It's probably less nowadays than it used to be. But there used to be the old, how can you talk about football unless you've played it? Well, now that he's a pundit and talking about football, I want to see him now play. Go on then, see what you can do now. But also, I wanted to mention him because of the mullet. Because after I did my A-levels, my mum took me as a treat to go and get my hair done at a very posh salon in London. And I thought, this is great. And the hairdresser said to me, what would you like me to do? And I went, I don't know, try something, whatever. I trust you.
Oh dear.
That was silly. I walked out with a Chris Waddle style mullet, because apparently that was fashionable on the catwalks. There are no catwalks in Luton that I ever frequented, so that was a little bit rubbish. And Neil
Webb.
We need
a picture of this, babe.
Oh, no.
All burned. Picture somewhere.
All burned. Neil Webb is another one.
If anyone knew Faye, by the way, around the 1990s, do you think you could find a picture?
Nope. They've all been paid off.
Oh.
I had a big crush, age 10, on Neil Webb. He was the sticker that I most desired for the Panini 1990 sticker album and the coins, if anybody remembers the coins. He retired from football and became a postman.
Yeah, well known. We tried to get him on Sky Sports a few times, actually, when United were doing all sorts of things. And well known fact. One issue, we've got strikers, attacking mids, wingers. We've got no defenders and no goalkeeper. Sarah?
I've definitely got Tony Adams on my list. He was I have the Tony first Adams. Name because obviously captain fantastic.
Yeah.
And you cannot have an England team without Tony Adams in it.
He would be the ever reliable, get this team together and let's get some results. So Tony Adams in there for me as well. More defenders. Oh, how about Tony Adams alongside Bobby Moore? World Cup winner, captain, natural leader.
Excellent.
Because then both of them could lead from the back. So we're going Tony Adams, Bobby Moore in there as well. Just as a quick one, Gary Lineker. Do we need to think about Lineker?
Probably. I mean, he is
a World Cup Golden Boot winner.
An England legend. You probably shouldn't have a veterans England team without a Gary Lineker in there, especially. You know,
who's going to present the programme, though?
Well, yes. David Beckham. If we're going on sort of razzmatazz.
Do we want any effigies burned, though? I mean, if it all goes wrong, not really.
And goalkeeper. I've basically got two defenders so far, so we might have to come back to that.
Well, David James is busy. You know, he's dancing, isn't he?
He's dancing.
Although that would be great. He could potentially design the outfits with the Strictly team, and we could have like a glittery kind of England kit. And then they could glitterify the trophy, whatever they're going to give.
Like, you could also have, just on that note, my daughter's a big fan of the up and down sequins. If you brush them one way, it does one thing. And if you brush them another. So we could have happy face, sad face.
Home sequins, kit, away kit.
Home kit, away kit. Or if the team are playing well, brush the sequins up to reveal a happy smiley face, sort of acid face. And then if you brush them down, sad face when they're not doing so well.
That might have negative connotations on the pitch,
probably
though, psychologically.
So goalkeeper, do we... Because it is hard, this one. When we think about England's best goalkeepers, you can't really look past Gordon Banks and Peter Shilton, can you? Shilton for me.
I'm going Dave Seaman.
You're going Dave, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
An all-time Arsenal 11 step out for England.
I'll put Euro 96, you know, versus Gordon Banks, World Cup winner, save against Pele.
I'll tell you what, let's go hair, let's go Seaman, just for the hair.
Oh, okay.
We've got Waddle, why not?
I've been overruled, everyone. I've been overruled by an Arsenal fan and someone who likes David Seaman's hair. Fullbacks.
Paul Parker.
Gary Neville.
Yeah, I suppose you've got to get Gary in there somewhere. Personality, he does have a big personality.
He does.
Yeah,
ticks that box.
Okay, Paul Parker, Gary Neville. Interesting, because I've written David Seaman here and my computer spell checked it to David Spism.
Could have been worse. Yeah. Could have been much worse.
So here we are then, guys. David Seaman in goal. In defence, Neville, Parker, Bobby Moore, Tony Adams. In the midfield, Neil Webb, Chris Waddle, Gazza. We're doing a 4-3-3, by the way. Joe Cole, Ian Wright and Matt Letizia up front. What do you reckon?
It's winning side, that.
We will submit our suggestion to the FA immediately by email.
This is the Offside Rule from Muddy Knees Media.
Before we go, time for a quick bit of any other business. Faye Carruthers.
Yeah, I just want to tip my hat to the youngsters who played in the Carabao Cup this week, because you had a 15-year-old on the bench for Rochdale, Peter Thomas, 16-year-old Luke Matheson scoring for Rochdale as well, and then, of course, 17-year-old Mason Greenwood scoring for Manchester United. I mean, I don't know about you two, but I was doing something significantly different aged 15, 16 and 17.
Yes, I got a shout out, 16-year-old Harvey Elliott for Liverpool, taking corners, just amazing. And a 17-year-old scoring as well for them. What were you doing at the age of 16, 15, 16, Sarah Shepherd? Because I'm intrigued.
What was I doing? Apart from obviously being very dedicated to my schoolwork, etc., I was playing a lot of table tennis.
Were you?
Bizarrely, yeah. Not quite to the same level as these guys, you know, doing it on TV in the Carabao Cup. But I used to spend most of my weekends travelling around the country playing in tournaments, quite badly.
Were
as
you
a junior,
ranked or...?
I did have a junior England ranking.
Oh my goodness, I never knew this about
you. I think I was like fifth or sixth out of, you know, females. Never quite made that, you know, that very difficult leap between junior and senior. Just fell through that gap.
Who were your table tennis heroes?
Oh, Matthew Syed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I saw that he went into journalism, I was like, wow.
Is he the reason why you went into journalism?
No.
No, okay, fine. I thought that we were going to have to tweet him then, so you'd never guess what.
Sorry, Matthew.
Faye Carruthers, what were you doing?
Well, I, very similarly, or certainly not up to the same standard table tennis-wise, I used to be a synchronised swimmer, and I quit around about...
I knew this.
Didn't you? Oh. I have told this story before. Yes, I was a synchronised swimmer. It's probably more like synchronised sinking nowadays, but I was doing all right. I competed in the nationals, got a little bit devastated at the age of 13 when they put me in an under-15s competition, and I came 100th out of 100. Oh.
Is it true that they make you... that you have to practice smiling underwater when you're a synchronized swimmer so that the smile stays for when you
you've got to be
out.
Very careful with that because you can swallow a load of water.
Exactly.
So I would suggest, No, we did not practice that. We practiced just trying to breathe and then you come up smiling. That's the whole point, is that you come up with your nose peg on.
Well, that's one thing I've always wanted to ask a synchronized swimmer. How uncomfortable are those nose pegs? Because they look horrible.
Yeah, they mark your nose for days afterwards. But
really?
What's really funny is that there's some old home videos, and no, you cannot see them, where my dad really badly on an old camcorder recorded me doing my stuff.
Oh, great.
And I'm pretty much, you can see me at times, a petulant teenager, rolling my eyes when I'm just thinking, I don't want to smile, I'm out of breath, and somebody's mucked up the team, and this is rubbish.
We need to get over to Faye's parents' house to A, pick out a mullet picture, and B, the home video. I can't remember. Yes, I can. At 15, 16, what was I doing? I was just trying desperately to be an actress. Overacting in every sense of the word, in every part of my life, trying to evade school and trying to earn as much money as I could waitressing so I could run away to London. There we go. The troubled youth here in the room. It sounds, the other two sound very wholesome compared to me. That's it, folks, for another edition of The Offside Rule. Please do hit subscribe on your various devices to make sure you get each episode as soon as it's launched. Leave us a 5-star review. You do that by pressing the 5th one. And it works. And it helps other people find us too as well if you rate and review us. Until next time, make sure you're following us on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Offside Rule Pod. Check out the website too, offsideruledpodcast.com. Some great pieces on there. What's going wrong at Everton? There's a couple of Man United pieces there too. Don't forget The Athletic with the great Sarah Shepherd editing some fine work there, and Faye Carruthers too. You can hear her on TalkSport 2 with her women's football show every Monday evening. Faye, where else can we hear you soon?
I am this weekend. Where am I going? Oh yes, Blackburn Luton this weekend for Soccer Saturday.
Fabulous. Thanks for listening, guys. Faye, Sarah, thank you very much. And we'll see you soon.
The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.